This is Eric Anthony of the Cave of Solitude, and it is my pleasure as we get into the proceedings this evening to introduce to you one of the finest MCs from the city of Toronto. Ladies and gentlemen,
it's Hazmatic. I go by the name of Haz.
Yes, sir.
You may have heard of me.
Oh, I know you heard of me.
Salutations. Good morning.
Oh, I know you heard of me.
Bizzle told me shine, he was like my bezel. I worked around the clock like a bezel. Better known as Michael Corleone. Help me get my itch back like hydrocortisone. Whoa. I am where the truth at. In fact, when you're looking through the facts, I am where the booth at. And according to results that the tests reveal, there's only one rapper keeping it extra real. Hazmatic, how I craft magic. The backpackers start unpacking while the trapper starts spazzing. God damn it, I'm a mixture of Nas, it ain't hard to tell. And L's, I am hard as hell. I spar with Rockefeller. And if any rapper think that he's sharper than the Andes, blade from barbers, let me part ya. Whether freestyling or scissors clipping your throw up, amazing how I take it off the top. Man, you know what? You know what?
Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude. I am your host, Eric Anthony. We are coming to you from the mega city metropolis of Toronto. And this week, we've got a podcast that's been years in the making. Since I started the show, my intention was to get to this point. So I'm very, very happy that we're finally there. Now, people have been asking me when they come around, sometimes a comic book shop or some of my friends who know this to be a comic book podcast or pop culture podcast, say, when are you going to do a hip-hop episode? We want to hear you talk hip-hop. And I said, I'll think about it. There's a specific reason why I haven't talked about hip-hop yet, because if I'm going to get into that realm of the other side of Eric Anthony, I had to get the right people to do my hip-hop episode with. And right by my side, the old friend from way back in the days who I can talk proper hip-hop with. Now, let me properly introduce this gentleman. Just recently, in the Toronto Guardian, there was an article posted, and this is what it had to say. This is just the intro, I'm not going to read the whole thing. It said, in the past decade, there's no denying the indelible mark the city of Toronto has left on the wall of urban music and culture. Now, in 2017, that legacy shall unquestionably continue to grow as Motion Entertainment officially launch and release their first single, Hey Young World, by the city's best MC you haven't heard of yet. Hey Young World, pay attention and turn the volume up. This is Haz. As it is?
Yes, sir.
Yes,
sir. Yes, sir.
And we're opening up a new door to the show, because now we're going to get into the music side of it.
Absolutely, let's do this.
And I waited to episode 94. I think it's serendipitous we did 94 because, one, I'm going to call this episode dedicated to her.
Okay.
In relation to Commons.
Common.
Right? Do you know what that ever meant? I didn't know what H-E-R meant, the acronym. Did you know what it meant? I had to look that up. I'm not gonna lie. Right?
We just accepted. I'd have to go back.
We just accepted that hip-hop was her. Hip-hop, in its essence, is real.
Okay.
So this is episode 94.
Commons Deep.
When that album came out, when Illmatic came out, when Ready to Die came out, we're going to get into hip-hop right here.
Putting me in some big shoes right there,
very
right?
Big shoes, because I believe in Hazardous and Motion Entertainment.
All right.
So let's get into it.
Right.
Let's take it back to the very, very beginning, because when people are going to invest in a person or art, they got to know who the person is. So let's go back to the very, very beginning, the early years. Where'd you grow up?
So I originally grew up in Rexdale. That was my first experience in Toronto. I grew up in Rexdale, and I'd say about till I turned about 10 or so, I moved out to Keelan Finch area. Mm-hmm. I was also in the Jane and Finch area around that time as well. But my golden days were in Keelan Finch. Gates.
Yeah.
We might get into that a little later.
We'll get into that
but,
later.
But definitely Jane and Finch and Keelan Finch, my stomping grounds.
And who did you grow up with in your house? Did you have brothers? Did you, like, tell us all about that.
Okay, so I'm the oldest of four boys. So I had three younger brothers that looked up to me. I had a big responsibility of being the oldest in the house, being the man of the house, taking care of business, you know, being that role model older brother. I feel like I did a pretty good job with that. All of my brothers now are into music. So it's almost like a pat on the back.
Yeah.
And it makes you feel like you're doing the right thing. So
Of course.
Had three younger brothers, so you know there was a lot of yelling, a lot of fighting. I see my brothers wearing my clothes, I'd have to go to school and take the clothes off of them. You know, it got a little messy at times, but yeah.
But that's the beauty of growing up.
That's the beauty of growing up. That's the beauty of growing up.
And it was just you guys and your mom?
Yeah.
Tell us about your mom. Tell us a little about her.
Oh man.
The mom's the backbone of the home, right?
Mom Dukes is the backbone. Phenomenal lady. Long story short, Jamaican fiery love. That's the best way I can put it. My mom is she's very loud. She's very loud, but she's very caring. Mm-hmm. She knows how to raise boys into men, and she did that with honor. I believe that I got a lot of my musical taste from my mother.
Yeah.
My mom, I have a little freestyle of her on the phone. I might have to tuck that away in the archive, but my mom knows how to throw it down on the mic as well.
For real?
Yeah, she let me hear a little something, something.
I did not know that.
She can hold her own. She can hold her own on the mic. So my mom definitely influenced me with the music. I remember waking up Sunday mornings to reggae. Like, the bass on reggae is undeniable. So I believe that kind of put me in a position to, you know, put myself towards music just based off of waking up on Sunday mornings and hearing that bass. That's kind of what caught me going into music, to be honest with you.
So I was going to ask that. What was that early musical influence? But was it the same, you think, for your brothers? Because you said all of them have that musical like drive in them.
Absolutely. So it kind of passed down, and I guess all of my younger brothers might have a slightly skewed or different experience growing up as it pertains to music. For me, it was with my mom, hearing the reggae, the bass from the reggae, and nodding my head to it. I took a liking to the music. So then for me now, I would play my music, and I guess my brothers would hear the Nas.
Okay.
Coming through my speakers. They would hear that music. And then my younger brother would probably influence my brother in line coming up.
Right.
So the music he would listen to would trickle down. So it would be like a snowball effect.
So it's like the passion baton.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. Without a doubt.
So how early did hip-hop capture your attention? Like, what's your earliest memories of hip-hop for you?
That's a good question. I remember the first tape or CD that I ever received. It was a tape, if we're gonna date it. It had to have been Slick Rick, The Adventures of Slick Rick, from a family member who I didn't even know knew anything about music. I don't even want to say his name, but I was like, thank you. Yeah, it was The Adventures of Slick Rick.
That's a classic.
Yeah. So I started off.
Kids should be listening.
No. I owe him a solid. I don't know how this happened, but it happened. The Adventures of Slick Rick. I think Will Smith. I had a Will Smith tape.
Okay.
And then from there, I think Snoop Dogg, Doggy Style. And then from then on, it was like, okay,
you're in.
I like this.
So at that time, at that age, who was your favorite MC, and why was it Vanilla Ice?
Okay. All right, I see what we're doing. My favorite MC back then would have been Heavy D.
Really?
Yeah, Heavy D. Heavy D was the first artist. When I had the Slick Rick tape, I would listen to it because it was my first tape.
Yeah, yeah.
But my liking for hip hop, it would have to have been with Heavy D.
Love. Okay. So was it what was it about the difference of listening to, you know, Slick? Obviously there's differences, but for you, what appealed to you about Heavy D? I did not know that.
Yeah, with Heavy D, he has a heavy Jamaican background and influence. So with Jamaicans, we're loud, we're vocal, we have style, cadence is big, the way we speak. And I think Heavy D just had a certain flow. And he had a certain swag to him. He was a heavier set dude. And rest in peace to Heavy D, by the way. He's a heavier dude. So he knew how to carry himself on camera.
Yeah.
And he knew how to carry himself in the studio. Like, his flow is kind of rhythmic, so I kind of took a liking to him. And I think it was just naturally I was growing older and growing closer towards hip-hop. And when I got the Slick Rick tape, I was still a little young to really dive into it fully.
Okay, got you. Yeah, because, I mean, naturally, hip-hop has 100% Jamaican roots, right?
Absolutely.
It was a Jamaican DJ who brought it to the Bronx, and they were playing reggae records, so it's only natural that if you're listening to reggae music growing up, the next natural progression would be hip-hop. Now, do you remember what kind of reggae it was your mom listened to? Was it like dancehall reggae?
It was cleaner days back then. It was a little cleaner. The reggae was a little cleaner. It was cleaner reggae. It was like Barris Hammond and a little bit of Bob Marley and, you know, just the cleaner conscious reggae, but the bass.
Right.
The bass was really heavy on that. So you'd wake up every Sunday morning and you would know you had a lot of cleaning to do.
depending on
the bass level, you knew how much cleaning you had to do. Yeah, it's true.
That's real.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
I still do the same thing. I don't know what it is about playing music that allows you to get into the mindset like, okay, I'm ready to clean now.
Absolutely.
I can't do it without music playing.
Absolutely. You have to have a soundtrack to cleaning.
It's true.
You got to do it.
So outside of hip-hop, what were your other passions as a kid?
You know, just doing what kids usually do, getting in trouble. You know, I was active in sports. I liked basketball. Baseball was my first love, actually. I used to play for like a little mini Blue Jay mini ball league. Played in the Sky Dome. That was my first love. And then from then, just all sorts of sports. Art. I was really heavy into art, drawing.
I remember that.
Yeah, exactly. Mr. Hall.
Yeah.
Mr. Hall. Same last name. Was heavy into drawing and women. That was a situation as well.
Disclaimer, we went to school together since grade like 6 or 7, so you're going to hear a lot of inside stories.
Yeah, we're going to go back.
We're going to do a lot of reminiscing.
We're going to go back.
I remember you being heavy into basketball.
Absolutely.
And I remember seeing you do things playing basketball as a little white kid in grade 7. I'm like, wow, this guy just did that? The thing for sports come from? Like, you were just naturally gifted that way.
Genetics.
Yeah. Was your dad into sports?
Dad was into sports, but I think I probably got it more from my mother. I knew my mother was heavy in like track and field.
Okay.
So I think I got more of the athletic gene from my mother.
Yeah.
My dad will probably tell me another side of the story and say, you got it from me, you know how that goes. But I believe my mom more on that one. I got to believe my mom more. But yeah, I just think it's genetics. You take a liking to certain things and you naturally, you know, progress at certain things and you have a knack for certain things and you just try it and you kill it.
Was there ever a time where there was a competition within you of like love of basketball and love of hip-hop? Because I remember there was a time where I'm like, this guy's going to go far playing basketball. And then what kind of tipped the scales for you?
Well, you know, life happens. You have an idea in your head of what and where you'll be in a few years. And certain things take on a role of itself. For myself, I was heavy into the sports because at that time, my peers were heavy into sports. I started realizing that it was more of a dream. For sports, for whatever reason, I guess I just didn't feel like I was that dedicated to it to live the rest of my life playing sports. I started taking a liking more so towards music because music and basketball, especially hip-hop music, they go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're on your way to go play a tournament, you're listening to music. When you'd come home from playing the tournament, you'd listen to music.
Mm-hmm.
So music became a little bit more important to my life. And as I started to experience different things, music was always there,
you know.
So I started to take more of a liking to the music. Still love the sports even till today, but music seems to be like the soundtrack of my life.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because you had a knack for being competitive. Like you wanted to be the best at what you did, but in playing team sports, for instance, you're constantly competing with everybody else. You got a team with you, but when it came to music, hip-hop, very competitive in its approach, but a lot of times you're competing with yourself. Was that, did that have anything to do with it, as far as like you still wanted to be competitive and braggadocious, but you wanted to kind of internalize it as opposed to having to constantly perform for people to watch you play basketball, for instance?
I didn't really look at it like that. Like, that analogy is actually pretty clever. I guess indirectly that could have affected my decisions, but I didn't really look at it like that. It's just, I saw the fork in the road and I decided to go to the left instead of the right.
Okay.
But you are right with the whole competition aspect. Both of them are very competitive. I just feel like music was a little bit more personal.
Yeah.
You could, it's as personal as your autograph or your signature.
Right.
And I felt like from a creative standpoint, there were no limits.
Right.
Whereas with sports,
It depended on everybody around you.
Absolutely.
Got you.
You know, music is more tangible.
There's
different aspects to it, and I just took more of a liking to that.
Got you. So then what's that point of no return then for you in hip-hop? Like, when did you get, or what was that thing that you heard, or when it clicked of like, oh, this is mine? Like, you kind of take ownership of hip-hop music is something that belongs to me. When, can you remember that moment?
An important moment for myself is when, actually, you were there with me when we went to, this was a crazy day, September 11th, when we went to go buy that.
2001. That
2001.
It was the day.
The day, cemented in history forever now. We went to go buy the Jay-Z Blueprint album.
Right.
And as we know, September 11th has relevance to a large event.
Yeah. I forgot what happened.
that was a crazy event. Let's just put it that way. For me, that symbolized then my favorite rapper dropping the largest, most talked about album, The Blueprint, and us going there. We had our little Blueprint books.
We bought them that
day. We bought them that day, actually. Yeah, we bought our little books. We were writing our rhymes. It spoke to me on certain levels that I can look back right now and say, yeah, this is actually when I really felt like this is mine now.
Okay.
Yeah, this is mine. There's a historical significance behind it. This means more than what I thought it really meant.
Okay.
This is here to stay. And just buying the books on that day, and I still have them at home.
Do you really?
I have them at home. I have them at home. Sometimes I'm itching to go back in the book and, you know, steal a little rhyme here and there and put it in my new music. But definitely that day was a lesson for me, and it stuck with me ever since.
That's awesome. I remember that day.
That's crazy.
We were both more worried that day, being young and stupid, if the malls were going to be closed in the city. Because I asked the principal and the teacher, like, you think the mall's still going to be open today? Because we got to buy a CD.
Absolutely.
I know people died.
Yeah. Right. Our heads were in a different space
back
then.
It didn't even come out that day. Do you remember?
It's crazy.
It came out a week later. Because it was the U.S. release date, and we had to get it a week later in Canada.
Okay. So your memory was always a little sharper.
But that's why we bought rhyme books instead.
Gotcha.
We had extra money, so we're like, let's buy books.
Gotcha.
But that's significant that a day like that in history changed people's lives in so many different respects because of like what was happening in the zeitgeist of hip hop music and in politics and like things happening, world history being made. But for you, you kind of turned your focus towards express like a creative outlet. That's awesome.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about that then. Your high school years, you became completely enveloped in hip hop. I remember you freestyling in the hallways at grade 9, and I always had heard people like being able to freestyle. When did you develop that ability to do it?
Well, throughout high school, a little prior to high school, to be honest with you, but in high school is when I really had a chance to sharpen my skills and compete.
Yeah.
With other artists or freestylers or...
Freestylers. I don't know if I call them artists.
I was being modest. It was a competitive time.
Yeah.
Even sports, because we liken hip-hop with sports. Even sports, a lot more competitive back then.
Yeah.
A lot more competitive. Now you see guys high-fiving and hugging and all of that. Back then, it was a little bit more dog eat dog, and that was the era that we were coming up in, and that's all I knew. So long story short, when that bell would ring for lunch, you know, you get the butterflies in your stomach because everybody would come up to me and say, hey, man, this guy wants to challenge you. This guy said he's better than you. And I had a little bit of ego back then. So just I was like, okay, just a little bit. So I had to see, like, what's up? Like, who are you? Let's get it busy. So a lot of I'd spend a lot of my lunch breaks in, like, the cafeteria doing little freestyles or in a hallway. Or I remember the drama room. I had a big freestyle battle. I don't want to say the other person's name because it was embarrassing. But, you know, I'll leave it at that.
I remember your biggest disappointment with that battle. It was the guy went did his verse, whatever, and it was all right. And everyone was like, okay. And then you started, and with the first rhyme, the first couplet, everyone just shut it down, and the whole room had to, like, everyone had to leave the room. And he was only upset because he's like, but I didn't even finish. I just started. Where's everyone
going? Yeah, man, you got to let me get through it.
I didn't say nothing yet.
You got to let me get through it. It was just a competitive time, and I'd get an adrenaline rush. And I still do now thinking about it. It's just, I feel like it was the perfect time growing up, like, to do the music venture and really dive into it. It was just everything was aligned.
But that ability to rhyme off the top of your head, like, where does that come from? Is that something you teach yourself? Is it something that you just, the sound of words are quicker, that they're able to come to you? Because as much as I, at that time, along with you, was developing an ability to write music and learn how to rhyme, it never just came where I could just, off the top of my head. Not a lot of guys can do that, as much as they say, oh, you got to be able to freestyle to be an MC. But where did that come for you?
Well, thank you, by the way. Again, a little bit of it is DNA. You have to be kind of gifted and born with a certain kind of knack for words.
Yeah.
And a little bit of it is repetition.
Yeah.
And practice. So I always was pretty witty.
Yes.
and I wasn't afraid to apply it where needed.
Yeah.
So whether it would be trying to pick up that girl that I always wanted, I would approach and think on my feet and be witty. Whether it would be, you know, talking myself out of a lie, I'd be witty.
Yeah.
So coming up with a line,
yeah,
I applied that same kind of thought pattern or thought process, and I would just dance and rock and roll, think on my feet, and just let it do what it do.
Was it also because of the amount of hip-hop that you listened to that you kind of understood, like, oh, that's how people can direct a train of thought, like, connect this idea with that idea? Was it from listening to hip-hop, or was it just something the way you operated?
Well, that also was a piece of it as well. The more you listen to hip-hop, the more you have a better read on hip-hop, especially if you listen to different sounds, different artists with different cadences, different tempos. You can find your way to work yourself out of a jam. So yeah. If you're, like, freestyling and you're like, oh, crap, I'm stuck, then you can maybe take on another flow. Like, twist the flows like this. So that mistake now became, like, the highlight of the, you know, now we're rewinding back to that time in the class when I did the freestyle and I said that one line.
Yeah.
I guarantee you that was a mistake. I didn't mean to say what I probably said, but it ended up being the showtime, the haymaker.
Right.
You feel a little bit more comfortable when you're more well-rounded and well-versed in that arena. So a little bit of it is a magic, I guess. I don't know, man. It's a little bit of magic.
Throwing words at you. I remember I would sit in the cafeteria, just throw random words. It was like that Eminem freestyle where they would, like, throw.
Yes. And you just come on the spot. Yeah. Absolutely.
Do you find that helps you now being able to write rhymes? Or do you feel like freestyling is, it's cool if you know how to do it, but it's not a make or break of whether a guy's a great MC?
That's a good question because I've been doing this for a little while now. So the true MC in me says, you know, you got to know how to hold your own. You got to know how to freestyle. You got to show me what you got. You know, I come from that era where your back's against the wall, back's against the ropes. You got to come out swinging. Show me what you got. You know, so that 8 Mile movie, it's not just a movie. Like, that's real. That's real life. But now as the scene has kind of changed, it's more of a almost not what you know, but who you know.
Mm.
So I can understand both avenues, both aspects. But me, true to heart, I think you should be able to hold your own.
In a battle.
I'm not saying you have to be Eminem talent level, but I think you should, as a hip-hop artist, you should be able to hold your own on a beat. You should be able to at least rock the mic for a bit. Something.
So there's different ideas of what freestyling is. Some people say freestyling is only when you come off the top of your head. Now, some of the greatest MCs of all time, like Rakim and Big Daddy Kane, said that was just when they would go off the top of the head, it was called, we're going off the top of our head, it's messing around. But freestyling was taking a rhyme that they had and being able to, like you said, get on a beat and rock to it. And it was a rhyme that was written without any real content necessarily. It was just a rhyme with rhymes in it. Do you agree with that sentiment? Because some people are the opposite, like, no, you gotta off the top of the dome, but then you got like the greatest of all time saying, no, that's not the way it has to be. What's your take?
You know, the whole culture of hip hop, there sometimes there's a gray area for certain things, like emceeing and a rapper versus, you know, there's a little bit of gray area. For me, I really feel like a freestyle should be a freestyle. I feel like a freestyle is flowing off of the top.
Where,
you know,
it comes.
It's free. It's just oozing from you.
Okay.
Anybody can take something that they wrote and somewhat like regurgitate it over a beat. Where's the art in that? Not to say that I've done it before. I've done it many of times.
I think most artists
do it.
When they say, can you drop a freestyle?
That's what they do. But I think we've just let it go for a while. And who's going to check it, right? Like, who's gonna say, no, this is not a freestyle. Like, no one's doing that anymore. And I don't feel like that's a genuine freestyle. Like, a freestyle should be spur of the moment, on the spot.
Whatever
you know,
comes out.
Exactly. Whatever comes out is what it is, to me.
Got it. I like that. You know who never was, they say maybe one time, it might have been on the Stretch and Bob Ito show in New York, but they said he never actually freestyled, was Nas. He never flowed off the top of the dome.
That is interesting. And now that I think back, I don't think I've ever heard him.
No. And that's why for me, I'm like, you know what? If he never felt the need to have to prove that he could flow off the top of the dome, like, I'm never going to question Nas's.
Absolutely.
You know, what he can do.
No, not.
So that's why I ask, because people have those opinions.
That's a good point. But, and then for that, I would just say he just doesn't freestyle.
Right.
Like, it's not to say, you know, an artist loses all legitimacy.
Right.
But
right.
If you ask me who's better at freestyling, Common or Nas, I'll say Common. Because I've heard Common flow off of the top.
But it wouldn't make him a better MC. Because
overall, no. That's just one category, one small category.
Yeah.
Like, Nas is a better storyteller than, like, pretty much any other artist.
Yeah.
Right? But there's some categories where Nas may not fare as well against another artist.
Gotcha.
Even if you're comparing him to an artist like Nelly or 50 Cent, there are some categories. But overall, are we going to say Nelly's a better MC than Nas? No, we're not going to.
No, I'm not going to say.
We're not going to say. I've been drinking, but I know what I'm
you
saying.
You know where you're
Nas,
at.
You know, so we're not going to go there.
So let's zero in a little bit more on that era, because that was
a very
fun time of our life.
Absolutely.
Every day was hip-hop oriented.
Oh, the Source magazines.
I was just about to say Source magazines.
Oh, man.
So hip-hop, do you see it as a culture? Or is it just art form?
I definitely see it's a little bit of both, but for me it's a culture.
Okay.
It's a culture. The whole embodiment of hip-hop now has grown so large, and you can see it everywhere. You can see it in commercials. You can see it all over TV. You can see it in fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So how can that not be a culture?
Right. And it had all those, like they say, the four elements of hip-hop were all representations of different parts of culture, that you didn't have to rap to be into hip-hop. You could be b-boy dance. You could be a DJ. You could be a graffiti artist. All those things. Or even the other element, they said the fifth element was the debating, understanding what was being done. Because a lot of people could engage in it, but even some people who could rap didn't really understand.
Right. We've had a lot of those moments. We've had a lot of those moments.
So for me, like, I think of hip-hop as a culture, and I heard this on, actually, the Drink Champ show when Fat Joe was on there, and Noriega was saying how he wishes there was, like, a hip-hop flag. That if you're a part of, doesn't matter what race you are, it's like the ultimate unifier. And for me, that was the experience that I felt hip-hop brought. Because going to the school we went to, as weird as it sounds, I was the minority. But hip-hop brought me together with people who others would be like, those are your friends?
Yeah.
And it had nothing to do with being white, black, Jamaican, Hispanic. It was hip-hop. That's what we belong to.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And that's actually a lot deeper than it sounds as well. Like, hip-hop has done more for race relations than
I think so.
Any other entity out there.
Yeah.
Like, one of the best hip-hop artists of all time, undeniably, Eminem. You can ask anybody that, and we don't shy away from that. We don't run away from saying Eminem is that dude, right? So, hip hop is very welcoming of talent, regardless of color, regardless of backstory. We love talent. So, hip hop, has done more for race relations than I think anything else that I can think of.
Yeah, I agree.
Any other entity, I stand behind that firmly too.
Well, even just think about us growing up, like the bond that we established with our group of friends was through the music. It wasn't because like, oh, I'm just going to hang out with Jamaican people. Or I'm just gonna,
right.
Who loves this as much as me that we can express ourselves through it. And I found as different as you could be with another person's background, whether you were from low-income housing or whatever the case may be, we were able to communicate through what other artists were saying. Did you find that as well? Like, I was able to understand you and the other guys in our group because of the things that they liked, the artists that they appreciated. I could understand a little bit about them. Did you find that to be the case?
Yeah,
as well?
You could definitely... You could see the third dimension of people, and not just through the artists they like, how they would dress, all of these things pertaining to hip hop. It would highlight in somebody's character or personality. You know, we'd go to school together and we'd have our friends and we'd have our commonalities. We would have things that we'd share in common with certain things regarding hip hop. And then they'd always throw you on that curve. And then you're like, yeah, I thought we were cool like that. But, you know, our conversations have to be a little shorter moving forward. So you definitely saw people in a different light depending on certain things. And it all stems from hip-hop. It all stems from hip-hop.
Yeah, because people could say, all you guys ever talk about is this. You guys talk about the same thing all the time. But I found it was like almost a Morse code that through... Me saying to you, did you hear this song from Scarface? I think you're going to really like it. Whether or not it was my favorite song.
Right.
I heard it and I could be like, I think it's going to speak to him for
right,
something.
Right.
And it was like a communication without us actually saying, this is how I feel about my life.
Right.
Here's a song. I think you're going to like it.
Absolutely. And you even hear that with like certain instrumentals. Like you'll hear a beat and in the back of your head, you're like, I can hear Cameron on this. I can really hear Cameron on this.
Yeah,
the puzzle pieces just come together.
Yeah,
and it just all makes sense.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, looking back at that time, who were your favorite MCs of that?
Oh boy, we're doing this. Yeah. Okay. what are we doing? Top 10, top 5, just favorite?
Just however you want to do it. What do you guys think? Should we do top 5, or should we do?
How we do it? Top 10.
Top 10.
All right.
Easier.
All right, it's a little easier. I don't have to feel as bad now. All right, let's do top 10. So what era are we talking about? Back then or just right now? Like
what you grew up in, the era that influenced you the most of becoming the MC you became. I know there was people along the way that changed it, but what do you go back to?
All right, let me...
The soundtrack of your life.
Let me put on my thinking cap. I'm going to say... Let me do number 10, Jay Electronica, because he's more recent. But that dude takes me to another place. And I'm not mad at where I go. I'm going to do Kendrick.
Okay.
I'm
just writing these down as well.
Absolutely.
I'm not ignoring you.
This might not be in perfect order, but I'm getting there. So 7, we're going to do Scarface.
You're at 8 right now.
Oh, I'm at 8?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to do Scarface at number 8.
Okay.
7, I'm going to do Mos Def.
Like it.
This is where I think the order is kind of mixed up,
right.
But I'm gonna do Lupe Fiasco.
Ooh.
Okay, I don't do Biggie. I don't do Pac on my list. I just...
Why?
I just...
You were a big Pac guy. That was the one time we argued. We would always argue.
See, you're a Biggie guy, right?
But I like both of them. I like both of them. But you were like, Tupac, no Biggie.
Okay.
Like, dude, come on.
Okay, I'm going to get back to this list right now. Okay. But the thing with Biggie and Pac, I just felt like it was, in our era especially, I felt like it was somewhat force-fed on us.
Absolutely.
Like, you're on this side or you're on that side.
I hated that. It was like Jay or Nas. I hated that. Why can't I like both?
Right, right. And I didn't really grow up with a heavy dosage of Biggie like that. Like, there's no way I could know about Biggie. I knew about Biggie. I knew, like, all of his lyrics.
Yeah, yeah,
I
had
all of his albums. But I just didn't grow up as heavily on Biggie as I did Pac.
Right, right.
So, you know, I was younger back then, and I fit into the hype. So I kind of missed out on the Biggie train.
Right.
Not completely, but I didn't get to enjoy Biggie's music as much because I was so competitive.
Yeah.
And I was rolling with Pac. Pac was
right.
my guy.
Right.
But now going back and listening to Biggie, he has the best flow. And nobody starts off the beginning of a verse better than Biggie.
I agree.
B.I.G., P.O.P.,
every single one.
You rain on top of Shutter, Leprechauns.
Yeah.
Sicker than your... Like,
every
when
time.
The Remy's... Come on, man. So, yeah. I give him his respects, but for my list, I just keep Biggie and Pac off. I just leave that alone.
Yeah.
Where we at? Like, number six now?
We're at five.
We're at five. Okay. Yeah. So, now it gets a little easier for me.
I almost want to guess, but I don't want to be
I think you'll pretty much get the rest. Take a stab at it.
I'm gonna say number five, Andre 3000.
He'd probably be number three at this point.
He's in the top five.
I
don't know where he would rank.
Definitely Andre 3000. I'm gonna do obviously Jay-Z and Nas. You can pick whatever slot you want to go into. And then, my favorite album of all time is Redman Muddy Waters. So I gotta put Reggie Noble. I think what helps me gravitate towards Reggie is the fact that he still keeps it so funky.
Yeah.
Till today.
Yeah.
Like he keeps that element of hip hop alive. So I gotta put Reggie in my top five. And I don't know, the last one right now, it skips my mind, but there's a few, Black Thought.
You put Black Thought?
Black Thought from the Roots. Black Thought from the Roots has to be on my top five.
Above Common.
Ah, you see, I knew I was forgetting somebody. Because when you said six, I thought I was at... When you said five, I thought I was at six.
See?
Yeah, okay, so Common's got to be in there. Yikes.
Would you remove Scarface, Mos Def, Lupe?
I would have to remove Lupe if I had to. I just feel like Scarface is too much of an OG.
You don't want to get him mad.
I don't want to get Scarface upset. So yeah, probably be Lupe. And I know Lupe's been around before Jay Elec and Kendrick, but I just feel like the impact they had on me, they stay. But no disrespect to Lupe, but.
I've got a very similar list, but that's not surprising because we had a lot of same sensibilities.
Absolutely.
So what I like that you always said you never changed was that Redman, Muddy Waters was your favorite album, which is a great album. It's a classic. But what was it about that one particularly that made it your favorite album?
One thing about music, when it hits you, feel no pain.
Mm.
When I received Muddy Waters, I was hanging out in New Jersey for a bit.
The home of Reggie Noble, right?
The home of Reggie Noble. So that influence already, just being in that setting, it took my mind to another place. Mm-hmm. But from a sonically, that album for me just represented raw, rugged hip hop.
It's
just
true.
From front to back, his voice, his cadence, his ad-libs, the whoa, the ha's,
yeah.
It was just so rugged. The album cover, if you guys don't know what that album cover looks like, type Redman, Muddy Waters. Exactly how you see that album cover is exactly how the music sounds. Just raw, grimy, grungy. Hip hop, I just love it. Like,
it's a clinic on just emceeing.
Absolutely,
it's just perfect emceeing. I mean, whether you agree with the things he talks about or his like his you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Just you listen to him. It's hard to describe.
No, I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
I can't relate to anything he talks about.
Me neither. Don't think I'm sitting there relating to.
But the way he rhymes and the way he gets his punchlines and like the connection of one idea to the next, it's such a clinic of learning how to put together a verse, I think.
Yeah, he was in his zone. You could tell he was in his zone.
Even in his later stuff, like, he just was, I don't know, there's something about him.
He's Reggie Noble. He stays true to self. I remember he had an episode of, I think it was like MTV Cribs. And, like, his...
He didn't rent a house.
He didn't rent a house. He kept it Reggie Noble, and that's what I always appreciated about him. Yeah. And I always wanted to carry that raw, rugged essence of hip-hop with me. And I got all of that from Redman. It was just the timing, and you know, it was a long album, but it was all quality. It was all quality. Eric Sermon went to work.
It didn't feel like a long album.
That's how you know it's good quality, right?
It was 24 tracks.
A few skits in there, right? That's when skits were a little bit more.
But he was the only guy who I felt took advantage of making skits entertaining.
Yeah, Reggie Noble. Yeah. Redman made the skits. Redman made this. You looked forward to hearing some of his skits and like Superman Lover Part 2, 3, 4, 5. You definitely wanted that from Redman. And that's the kind of artist. He was like a cartoon.
Yeah.
So that's exactly what you're kind of looking for from an artist like Reggie. So
back then,
shout out to Reggie.
All those guys were. Back then, hip hop was so good because the character was as important as the music. Like you have Busta Rhymes. And you had all of the Wu-Tang Clan that took on a certain character, Redman. I feel like that's something that's a little bit missing today.
They were like wrestlers. Yeah, a little bit missing though. Yeah, it's definitely missing. I did a song called "The Setup."
Yeah.
Great
song.
Yeah, shameless plug.
We can fit that in there.
We can fit that in there somewhere.
Plugs.
But I'm paying homage to all of the artists of yesterday.
Yeah.
And when I look back at it, they're the kinds of artists we're talking about right now. They were like characters. They were like wrestling characters. And they made it fun for us. Their albums were a little more entertaining. They had a certain role that they had to play in hip-hop. They all had a role. So I took a liking to that. So
that's a great song. You know what I like about that song? For someone who were to listen to it today, if you're a seasoned hip-hop fan or a young hip-hop fan, it really shows your knowledge of the genre. Like, you're not just some Johnny-come-lately who's not into rhyming, but you know where it comes from. You know the essence of it. That's what one of my favorite things about that. Speaking of that song, how did that concept come together? And how did you know who to choose to reference to in that song?
Well, that's a good question. So, shout out to Spunk Bigga. He hooked me up with that beat. When I heard the beat, I knew exactly what I wanted to do with the beat. As soon as I heard the beat, I said, this is going to be a story. I'm going to play different characters. I'm going to do different voices. I'm going to have a little fun with it. In terms of the artist who I chose, it goes back to this whole question of today's artist and yesterday's artist. Yesterday's artist, they had more of a voice. They had more of a character. So certain artists, as you know, are more animated than others. So let's say a Busta Rhymes.
Yeah.
You know, he's very animated. Let's say Eminem, he's very animated. And then you have some artists where it's more so the voice, very unique voices. So like Q-Tip, he's not the most animated artist, but his voice is very unique. So I was trying to really keep it in that 90s, mid-90s, late-90s hip-hop era. So I chose artists that really stuck out to me in terms of characters. Like, I didn't even do Jay-Z on that one.
No.
And Jay-Z, as you know, is like my top dude, right?
Yeah.
So it just goes to show you that just because you're my top dude, it doesn't mean that in terms of character that you fit the bill for that. So that's where I kind of got that idea. I wanted to entertain people and,
drop artists
with signature voice and cadences and styles like Slick Rick. So, you know, that's where I got that idea from.
Like it. So on this list, I'm looking back at it. No Eminem. Was that a clear omission or were you, it's just something you forgot?
Oh, wow. This is crazy. Eminem, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Em. No, Eminem is definitely on the list. Like, so now I got to get rid of somebody else?
No, I'm just playing with you.
Oh, sheesh.
I'm just thinking of all of the people that.
Yeah.
I'm going back and like the ones we listened to intently, Beanie Siegel.
I was a big Beanie Siegel. I got into a lot of arguments for Beanie Siegel.
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah.
May have lost a friend or two.
Yeah, or three. Yeah. Yeah. No, M is on the list.
Ghostface.
Ghostface is definitely... Ghostface is a special artist to me. A top 10 list, I don't know where he fits the top 10 because...
It's hard.
I don't know who I could bump
right.
in my top 10 list. Like, when you say Eminem now, I know I can bump somebody.
Okay, who do you bump?
Shoot, wait, I didn't think you were going to ask me. No. You're not supposed to ask me. I'd probably, if I wanted to be, because I already had to bump Lupe, right?
You bumped Lupe.
Oh, wow.
You're not moving Jay Electronica. I know.
No, I'm not moving Jay Electronica, and I probably wouldn't move. I probably wouldn't move Lupe. Kendrick either. I'd probably, as crazy as it sounds, I'd probably move Redman.
So you pick Eminem. Mos Def over Redman?
Yes. Okay. Yes, yes. Mos Def is a special artist to me. I think he can tap into a realm that most artists can't get me to tap into.
Okay.
And I think because he has this universal understanding of language and life, mm-hmm. and the way he depicts that, he's very wise. He gives me something that I can't get from any other artist. Like, it's only very few, like Andre 3000, how they use their art to paint certain pictures.
Yeah.
And Mos Def will definitely stay.
So here's the question that's going to be.
Let's do this. Okay? Let's do this.
We might get into a fight in the room.
All right.
Jay-Z or Nas?
All right. So we're going to have to cut the cameras right here. We're going to have to get back to this.
We're going
to
edit it.
Wow. Okay. Jay-Z or Nas? Today, for me, I would have to say Nas. I'm a little older. I've been through a little more in my life. And I could understand a little bit more of Nas's story. But what drove me all throughout my writing years, for the most part, to get to this point, was Jay-Z. Jay-Z represents the Superman of this artistry.
Yeah.
And I can't take that away from him. I can't pick one over the other, to be honest with you.
No, it's... Yeah, I did it on purpose.
I knew there had to be something. But they're both sacred to me. You can't have one without the other. But right now, in my life... Right now, I'm more on a Nas tip, but that new Jay-Z album, yes,
spoke to you.
It spoke to me.
Do you have a favorite verse from Nas? One that comes to mind? If someone said to you, "Why is Nas great?" What's the verse that you refer them to be like, "Listen to that," and then don't talk to me no more? And do you have one respectively for Jay that you say, "Listen to this," and that's why?
Okay, that's a good question.
You got to come back to it.
Probably have to come back to it, but you see, for me, with Nas would be his earlier work. I know how great he is now. He's always been great, but when you hear "It Ain't Hard to Tell," "I Excel and Prevail," that's his early work. So to hear him rhyming like that at such a young age, it blows your brains to bits. Like, somebody today hearing that, it probably won't hit them the way it hit us when we heard it for the first time.
You heard it.
Yeah, I heard it a little. I heard it a little early.
Yeah, I had to go retroactively and search that out. But even then, it was like, I hear that song today and it still gives me goosebumps.
Yeah, definitely. My favorite Nas song is till today is "Represent," off of his first album. So it just goes to show you my liking towards Nas. So it dates back to his first album. Jay-Z, wow, I don't even know where to begin with him because he has so many songs that can be categorized in the same.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd have to get back to Jay and Nas, to be honest with you, because I don't even think the one I mentioned was good enough to be that verse. So
yeah.
I'd have to get back to you on both of them.
What side were you on during the battle back in the
day? I was The Rock. back then it was The Rock. You know, you're younger and you gravitate towards the hero, and Jay-Z filled those shoes. He was the hero. He was the spokesperson. He was the voice. He was the everything. Like,
yeah.
You know, he was the
Mike
direction.
Jordan.
He was the Mike Jordan of rap, right? Like, the direction he went in is where the rest of the rappers wanted to be.
Right.
So back then, for me, it was hands down Jay.
Got it.
Jay.
But you know what? We were never the type that listened to one and refused to acknowledge the strengths and skills of what the other guy was doing, which I think separates how you listened to music. So when did you crack that code of I don't think you can say there's a greatest of all time, right? It's subjective. Music is subjective. But I do think there is certain things in hip-hop, just like in when you listen to music, that's a good singer. Like, you can't deny that whether or not you like the sound of their voice, Mariah Carey knows how to sing.
Right, right.
Adele knows how
Whitney
to sing.
Houston.
All those people, they had voices. There was the tangibles there. And in hip-hop, I think you can find similar things of look at what he did with the rhyme pattern. Look at what Eminem does with counting his syllables. Some people don't pay attention to that.
Right, right.
When did you figure that aspect of, because you put me onto that, like, listen to this. When did you figure that out, the cracking that code, if you will?
You actually helped me do that as well with a lot of the music. I kind of, even though you're saying I put you onto it, I kind of feel like we kind of did it.
Back and forth,
yeah. I feel like we kind of did that together, to be honest with you. Again, it dates back to as early as listening to Snoop Dogg, Doggy Style, listening to the early works that influenced me today, just finding little tangible pieces that I gravitated towards. I think that's kind of what helped me. And then moving forward, when I really got into it, like with the Redman album,
right,
and started going into Jay-Z and then Nas, I started taking interest in writing.
Yes.
And once I started writing, I started understanding what I was listening to a little bit more. So I think that kind of is what helped me throughout that process. As far as a timeline, I couldn't tell you the exact timeline or like the era per se, but that's kind of how I arrived to that place. But you had a heavy hand in that. A super heavy hand in that.
How would you say? Like, what was it that... Because when I learned how to count bars. Like, you showed me this, how you count the bars. And then even the way the instrumental went. Look at the fact that he paused here on purpose. Or he didn't say anything there. Like, those were... And sometimes we would listen. You'd be like, did you hear what he did? And I wasn't even realizing that you paid attention. So how in response, how did I do that back?
Because a lot of times, too, you have a great read on music, right? Your IQ on music is very high. And you'll listen to a song and you'll extract the DNA from it. So a lot of times you would say, hey, yo, Haz, did you hear that? And I'm like, yeah. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, yo, I didn't really know that. I didn't even really know that. But I'm like shaking my head because I know you were looking to me thinking, yeah, he already knew this. But sometimes I was like, I really didn't know that. So I'm saying it now in front of everybody. Yeah. So you opened up another layer.
Mm-hmm.
For me, there was a lot of rhymes that I didn't understand, and you broke it down, and I was just nodding my head like I knew, but I really didn't know. Yeah.
I know.
So I didn't really know, like, word for word. So, yeah, you had a heavy... Yeah, it is what it is. You had a heavy influence on that as well. Like, that's why I say in one of my rhymes, Bizzle told me shine. He was like my bezel. I worked around the clock like a bezel.
They're not going to get that. What's Bizzle made me shine?
Okay, all right. So, yeah, you're right.
The intro to this episode. I'm going to play that song as the intro.
Okay, you have my blessings.
So they're going to...
You have my blessings.
What's a bizzle? They're going to say, what's a bizzle?
All right, so bizzle. So Eric or Bizzle or Michael Corleone helped me get my itch back like hydrocortisone. We would, as you know, we had a heavy influence on hip-hop, or rather hip-hop on us, throughout our high school years. So, you know, we had our little nicknames.
Our carny names.
Yeah, we had a little group,
yeah.
Gates. Check out the mixtape wherever you can find it.
it's
available on
somewhere.
iTunes.
Yeah.
23 cents. Yeah, you can find that over there. We were really competitive, and I think we owed a lot of that to, like, the whole Rockefeller verse, D-Block verse,
yeah,
whoever. So we were trying to do our own little movement. So we formed a little group, and I came up with the name Haz. I named myself in, I think it was computer class. I wasn't doing any of the work. So I came up with the name Hazardous because I wanted something that best defined my MC style. And I thought I was grimy and real rough and real lyrical, you know.
Yeah, you want to flip
bravado,
it.
Bravado.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how I came up with my name. And then for you, did I give you?
I think, you know,
I
what?
Think,
you used to take people's
to names,
people's last
names,
and, like, you just flip it on the,
yeah,
the Snoop Dogg thing, and
yeah,
I just became Bizzle.
Yeah. You just
so when you hear that, it's a reference to me. That's my other pseudonym, Bizzle.
I gotta thank you for that. I gotta thank you for that, by the way, man. You really influenced me heavy. I gotta thank you for that. I gotta thank you for that.
That was a thrill to hear on something new that you're doing that sound like we did a lot of music together, but now you hear something that someone's putting their passion into, and you can take it back to that era and still see that you had that. Because, you know, a lot of people forget, or time goes by and they feel like, yeah, that was back then. But to hear that reference, something like a deep cut like that, no one else might get, it was a big shout out. I appreciate that.
And I appreciate you even more for that, because you taught me how to drop the little gems in there, or appreciate the little gems. Like, you would always call out certain things, like when Jay-Z said, "You know who? Did you know what? Well, you know who? Let's leave that between me and you." And you'd be like, "For now." I'm like, "Oh yeah, I forgot about the for now piece." So you always knew how to highlight those moments. So I try to drop that in my music as well. So, you have a heavy influence on my music, man.
That's big. I you know what? I said it before on certain posts that having, I think, a trained ear to understanding MCs' tangibles, what they're doing within a verse, and how you said Biggie's flow or Tupac's cadence or the details that Nas puts into a song, like, I remember listening to the Lost Tapes and hearing him describe in one verse just the area he grew up in, and hearing all of these things that he references that I wouldn't understand because I didn't see them, but I know it now because he painted this picture. And all of those things coming together in music, like, it was one of those things that we could communicate with. It was, I don't know, it's just you appreciate. So having that trained ear, when I listen to you now and I see all those little things you do, like, even especially when you rhyme beside another person, and I really like the people that guest feature on your project, but there's a difference in the tangibles.
Okay.
In the knowing when to punch in and writing a verse to say, okay, don't speak there, punch in, add that. It adds a layer to the ambiance and the scenery of a song.
Absolutely.
A lot of people don't always pay attention to. So that's why I say this is one of my favorite MCs, and that's not just because he's my friend. It's the tangible.
I appreciate that,
man.
Quick shout out to Akil Ali, Speng Don, F-Lab.
Great.
Just a few artists I work with. Of course, my bro J-Mac. So I just want to give them the just due. Spunk Bigger, you already know.
So let's talk a little bit. Let's go back a little more.
Oh,
we're
going
to get into Motion.
Oh, boy.
I know you guys are waiting to talk about Motion Entertainment. Let's talk about Gates for a little bit.
Okay.
Your first time getting into the booth. A big shout out goes to Josh, who set all, he brought the group together.
Yes.
It wasn't for him.
Yes, the nucleus.
He was the nucleus. He wasn't a voice in the booth, but
We tried to get him in the booth. But then we had to get him out quickly. We had to get him back out quickly.
But he set the thing up for us. So can you take us back? Tell us a little of the story of how you first started recording and what that experience was like. That was a family affair.
Yeah, this is where it begins now. So the whole Gates movement started. I lived in a gated community.
Yeah.
We had our little fake war, our little fake beef with a certain artist or student from another school. We were all tied into that little fake beef thing going on. So long story short, we formed like an alliance, yourself, my brother, Oreo. Shout out to Oreo. Yes, sir. Roach P. Roach P is a verb, an adjective, a noun, everything. You guys will understand this later on in life. But yes, shout out to Roach P as well. So long story short, we made like a little diss track towards an artist. And we formed it in the name of Gates. So that was our little crew. And Josh kind of like was the nucleus to all of this. He had a connection in Scarborough to his studio. Shout out Supa. Shout out Pops, Josh's Pops. I don't know if he wants me to give the name out there, so I'm just gonna leave it alone like that. But we had a really good studio situation out in Scarborough, and we would go out there and record music. Sometimes we do like six songs in one setting. Mm. We take the train, just the raw elements of it. I miss those days, man. We take the train, and you know, we have our little rhyme books.
It was a journey, right?
It was a journey, man. It keeps you humble, man. Yeah. I miss those days. So we'd go out to Scarborough and we'd record in the booth. The booth smells like morning breath. It's hot in there. We're all just spitting our verses.
I remember you saying that all the time. Yo, it smells like hot breath in
here.
Yeah,
man. I need cleanliness. It's close to godliness. Yeah, man. It was crazy back then, man. I just missed those humble beginnings. But yeah, that's how it all started out. And I guess you'll get into the motion stuff later, but it's funny how it comes into play now.
So those early experiences of working in the studio, we went from writing rhymes, hearing a beat, trying to write something, and then going back and forth. Okay, what do you got? What do I got? And then now you record. How did that change how you wrote? Knowing the actual science behind where your verses go, doubling up, knowing how to... Because we used to write rhymes and be like, not take a breath.
Yeah, and we learned a lot of hurdles, man.
And then you can hear yourself back. You're like, oh, that's not so good. So how did that change your writing style?
Right. So, you know, hearing yourself, it can be agonizing.
Right? Yeah.
So it's kind of like your smile, right? Yeah. When you look in the mirror, are you really smiling? Like, do you believe it?
Yeah.
So long story short, the booth, like when you record, that's like watching yourself on game tape.
Right.
So what you think you're doing in the boxing ring or when you're shooting that jump shot and you're looking at your form, it doesn't look how it feels.
Right.
So you learn a lot of things about yourself, like my voice range, like what's a comfortable range for myself? When do I need to start using breath control?
Right.
You start learning the little tangible things that you never really took into account until after you've heard yourself. So of course this affects how you write, because if you're a student of the game, you're gonna make your little mental notes like, I really sound good here. Why is that? Oh, this is why? Okay, so I'm gonna start writing a little more like that. Or I really don't like how I sound here. This is not really my arena. So let me stop doing this and start rewriting. And then as you do that, you start formulating a larger repertoire that you can choose from now. So it's like, oh, yeah, you know what? I can harmonize a little bit. Yeah. It's not going to sound really, you know, I'm not going to sound like the best harmonizer out there, but I can hold the note.
Right.
So you're confident in that arena. And then you knock that down and then you start moving it to something else. Oh, I can tell a little bit of a story here.
Right.
You start adding that to your repertoire. And then you start building and building and building and building. And then you have this large catalog that you can choose from.
Right.
That you can handpick things from. So if you're taking the proper notes when you're listening to yourself after you record a song, you can only grow.
Right.
Especially if you're pushing for a new sound and growth, you can only move up.
So then we went from there. We learned we heard ourselves. We knew where we were whack. Those first joints, they were whack, but you could see potential in them.
Yeah. That's a line from somewhere.
Little brother.
Okay, yes.
But then, a few months later, there was all this promise of, we're going to have you on Caravana Floats and do this and go here and you're going to perform live. And it was a little bit of that fear of, whoa, this is going fast. But what was it like to hear yourself on the radio? Because that happened back then. Hearing yourself on the radio.
So I almost got in a car accident that day. I remember it was I think it was in Veronica. I think they played it was a song. They had a clash of two songs. When I first heard the are you talking about the Gates?
This is when we did the blow up anthem. It was called.
Oh man, we're taking it back. Okay.
That was the first time you're on the radio.
That is true. That is true.
What's that feeling like?
It's larger than life. You really feel like you want to call your mom that day and say, "Mom, we're moving. We're moving out the hood. We're pack your bags. We're moving. We're moving out the hood." It's larger than life. You know, you're really young, and you're positioning yourself to be heard by your peers. You really feel like, okay, I really can do this. Like, I'm on the radio now. Like, this is a sign that I'm going places. So
I'm being played.
People can hear me. They can give me feedback. That I'm out there. They can have access to me without me physically being the one giving them the music. Like, this is huge.
You're not phony about it.
This is huge. So that was a good look. And that's where it all started.
So hearing yourself on the radio, was that like, for you, was it that feeling of, I made it? Or was it just the taste? Like, oh, I can keep going with this.
I made a few phone calls to the family and said, our living conditions are going to change. Our living conditions are going to change right now.
So we will put a pin in it at that high point of the conversation. Come back for episode 95 as we continue our discussion and our love for everything hip-hop, and we're going to discuss more into the future of what's in store for Haz and Motion Entertainment, because we didn't even really get to that point yet. The next half of the conversation will focus more on what to look forward to coming from the entertainment group that is Motion. So please stay tuned. Thank you for listening. Remember to check out Haz on YouTube, Motion ENT on YouTube, SoundCloud, and email us at caveofsolitude@outlook.com. I wish I could play more of the music for you. I can't wait for y'all to hear it. Stay tuned. Episode 95 right around the corner.
A breaking news story to tell you about. Apparently, a plane has just crashed into the World Trade Center here in New York City.
Hey, young world. Are you happy this morning? Are you happy this evening? Are you happy tonight? A new day, Blu-rays, new wave. Success and accolades for you to claim. We've become excuse makers who use paper, but paper can make paper mache. Take lemons, lemons make lemonade. Can't take criticism, criticism isn't hate. Hey young world, we can be kings and queens and beam. Instead we obsessed with diamond rings that gleam. My third eye told me walk blindfolded. Appreciate your vision when you can't rely on it. Fly ain't about nothing, now I'm an insect. And then they turn around and tell me I'm the one bugging. They on something. Hey young world. Young world, promoting old ways won't change this young world. We living in times behind enemy lines. My soul, I got mine. I'm a king in this young world. Hey, young world, are you happy this morning?